All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is former NHL forward and two-time Stanley Cup champion with the Chicago Blackhawks, with a reputation for singing in public, Chris Versteen. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What is going on, Nasty?
I'll tell you what, Riggs. The flowers are blooming. The grass is growing, and it's time to chop those weeds. I'm talking to you, because I know you've not been chopping them lately. Yes. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim your holes safely and efficiently.
Got to trim them safely and efficiently.
You have to be efficient when you're shaving your balls. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I am talking about ball trimmers, Riggs. Manscaped, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, have an exclusive offer for our audience. Use code Knuckles to get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Join the other 2 million men who trust Manscaped. They are here to make sure you are trimmed and smelling nice. After all, it's time for spring cleaning, Riggs.
Oh, is it ever?
Spring has sprung, and Manscaped has the best tools to get you ready. You guys should have figured it out by now that you should not be trying to trim your balls with a razor and cutting them up. Riggs has this, he's got Band-Aids everywhere, all over his nuts. Manscaped are the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming and have forever changed the grooming game and their amazing products. They are here to help with your above-the-waist holes, too. Have you heard of their weed whacker, Riggs?
I have. I got one.
I know you do. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. Careful with your holes, bud. The delicate ones especially. No more gross nose hairs flying in the wind. Ugh, God, that's disgusting. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. It's starting to get hot outside, and this is crucial so your balls stop sticking to your legs.
No one wants that, Nast.
No, it's the legit worst. It really is. You'll also find the Crop Reviver spray-on toner for your balls, which will keep you smelling fresh down there, Riggs, just like spring flowers.
Ooh, I love spring flowers.
Well, who doesn't? Speaking of smelling fresh, complete your grooming game this spring with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. This stuff is legit and will have you smelling like royalty. You'll be the talk of the next quarantine hang, Riggeralia. Smell good, feel good this spring. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Knuckles and manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Knuckles at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code Knuckles at manscaped.com. It's spring cleaning, baby. Your balls are going to thank you, Riggs.
Oh, yeah. And they have.
Yeah. For sure.
And you got to use the right tools, Nast. Use the right tools, you're gonna have some issues. So
you will.
Well done,
Timmy Parr.
Timmy Parr, well done. So what's going on, Nast? Everything good in your world?
Yeah, everything's good, except a big I have to say it. It kills me to say it, boys, but we got shit kicked last week, and I mean shit kicked. Big championship game coming up for Natty Ice. We lost to the Devils, and they said, we better hear about this on the pod. So I got to give them props. They beat us like a drum, I will say. But we're coming this weekend.
All right.
They didn't know that we had to use. By the way, they had players right at the end of the season. Like, the deadline's over, boys. They
squeeze
added,
me
like,
in for the playoffs.
I'm going to have to. Like, we're going to have to. You're going to have to show up Sunday.
All right, set the tone for a shift. That's all I got.
What about you? What's going on?
Not a whole lot, man. Just enjoying the nice weather and, looking at what the Flyers have been doing, following them a little bit the last week and seeing how they're inserting some of these young guys in the lineup and give them a little look-see.
What's
going on for next year. And I think they're at that point now. It's just giving these guys a little taste and see what they can do, because they're obviously, I think they've accepted that playoffs, postseason is a no-go. So now we're just looking ahead and trying to figure out some pieces for next year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I really didn't. We've talked about this weekly. Right. Did not see this with this team. It is. It's a shame. You know, like, it is nice to see the kids getting thrown in there and getting a chance to play big. Zamula last night, Big Z. He played well. Simple player, but, you know, he's long. He's a big, tall guy. I thought he played well last night. Still enjoying watching Allison. I love that kid. I love the energy he brings.
Yeah, a lot of energy.
So that's kind of cool, but it's still, like we talked about, it just sucks when, you know, you've got games and they don't really mean anything. Standing-wise, you could win them all now, and I don't think we're going to get in. But no. It's tough to watch, but, you know, got to look forward to next year, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, just find some positives within the season. Again, maybe look at these young guys and see what they can do. G hit a milestone, which is another huge milestone for him, slipping in the third spot for all-time Flyers scoring, which is obviously a huge accomplishment. And
I think
we're 33 points behind Billy Barber, which is pretty amazing. So
it is. And still people calling for his head around here. It blows my mind away.
Yeah. No,
blows my mind away.
It's hard to replace a guy like that. I think when people talk bad about G, you know, they think that he needs to be this extremely verbal leader. Which is, you know, it's not his personality to be like a rah, rah, you know, loud type of leader. I think he is a great leader. I think the challenge within that locker room is a supporting cast of leadership. We talked about that before. You know, there's a handful of guys, but you look around the league and see the teams that have won in the last, say, 10 years between the Pittsburgh Penguins, Chicago Blackhawks, LA Kings.
Yeah.
You know, they have a core group of leaders. So I think for G, it's just a surrounding cast, you know, just maybe building that surrounding cast of leaders. It's not that easy to do, but G is a high level performer an elite pro, you get rid of him. How do you replace him? You know, you're gonna find a guy. You probably land up overpaying for a free agent. But that's my opinion. I love G.
Yeah,
always have. And his point production to me hasn't dropped off. They're just people are just looking for answers and trying to dig through the lineup and see what the hole might be. But you know, G, high end performer in my opinion, and a great leader. He's one of those quiet leaders, but he cares, man. You're not going to find a guy that competes harder and shows up in practice and shows up with a good attitude at the rink and is well respected in the locker room. So to me, that's a leader. Doesn't have to be that vocal leader, but you lead by example, right?
Yeah.
That's what it really ends up being at the end of the day.
What you said there's huge that I don't think a lot of people see is like Claude comes to work every day. He doesn't take a practice off. Like I've seen him for like years get on people if they're kind of goofing off. Yeah,
for sure.
In practice, like he practices how he plays. I said yesterday to this guy that was here in the shop, and he's like, "Well, finally the other night, gets two goals." I was like, "What do you want him to do? Score two goals a game? No one does that. Like, he's not going to score 100 goals in 50 games. Like, I don't know, but it makes me laugh. I know how some people just don't get it, but." He shows up to play. I honestly can't ever remember a game where I didn't know that G was given everything he had. He's his competitor. It could be arm wrestling. He's arm wrestling.
Yeah,
guys
exactly. He's just
everything's a competition with him, and
it's ingrained in his DNA for sure.
And I know it's cliche, but he hates to lose more than he likes to win. Like this drives him nuts. But he's not that guy that's going to get on TV and lose it or whatever. He's just professional and goes about his business, but like you said, he leads by example. He's not a big screamer. He talks when he has to, big accomplishment. And by midseason next year, he's gonna probably have passed Billy. Which is amazing. I mean, second all time. I don't care if he was played 20 years, it's amazing. I don't know if he'll catch Clarkie, but
that would be a tough one,
but it's impressive.
It is. And, and in a comparison in the coaching world, I remember John Stevens taking a lot of heat for not being overly dramatic on the bench and showing all this emotion. And I look at Johnny as like one of the greatest professionals I've ever been around. And part of his, his demeanor and his teaching was like is showing composure, right? I mean, it's easy to just lose it and go off the rails and freak out every time something doesn't go your way. And yeah, people get get off on it. It's entertaining. It's and all that stuff. I look at Johnny. He took a lot of heat for like, oh, we didn't show enough emotion on the bench, But it's like, it takes a lot of discipline to stand there when things aren't going your way and to maintain composure. I look at Johnny. He's like, 100%. Man, this guy. I mean, I don't even know how he did that. At that time, because I'm like, myself, and like I'm trying to like look at the coach. And you kind of like follow the coach's lead. If the coach comes unraveled, your team's going to come unraveled, right? It's like the head of the snake. But I think it's easy for fans to jump down, people's throats and have an opinion on a player or a coach, based on what they see, through the camera, sitting on their couch at home, but they don't understand what's going on in the background and all these conversations and all, there's what's really going on in the locker room, but that's just the way it is, there's something to be said about quiet leadership and maintaining composure and calming the crew as opposed to just letting it just go haywire, and then you have no real leadership at all, and everyone's kind of following that negative vibration, if you will. So
it's funny you say that, because the people don't see when he gets past that tunnel. And he's not happy.
Yeah, he's not happy. His lips start shivering. And
his fucking eyes are fucking trembling. But the people don't see that. So I get they don't understand it. But like you said, they want to show. Like, people love that. And I understand it. It is kind of fun sometimes to see a coach absolutely lose his mind. But Dave Haxtell went through the same thing. People are like, oh, he's too stoic. I'm like, what do you want him to start flipping out? Like, that's the way he is. That's, trust me, as soon as he gets underneath, he's not happy.
Boiling.
Trust me, we're around it. We've seen it. And I understand people don't get that, are lucky enough to get that point of view like we have over the years. But I remember a quick little G story, Claude. One night when Hack was still here, they challenged a goal. And we hadn't, the refs had been awful all night, this particular game. And Hack calls everyone over and he goes, "Hey, no matter what, whatever happens, goal or no goal, let's stay positive and get after it." You know, and everybody's like, "Okay, yeah." And then G jumps over the board and he goes, "If they don't call us a goal, I'm going to fucking lose it." And we all just start dying laughing. You know, he jumps over the board and goes, "I'm going to fucking lose it if this is not a goal." Hack's laughing, you know, like,
"Oh, yeah."
Like, you should take a picture of Hack, like, laughing on the bench. But yeah, anyway, you're right. Like, people want to see that. Like you said, it takes so much composure to stay composed, and it's mentally, you know, it's probably
a skill,
hard.
Man. It's a skill to stay that disciplined and composed. And most people don't realize that how much willpower it takes to just like sit there and kind of just like process what's going on without overreacting. Cause it's easy to overreact, you know, especially if you're getting shit kicked and there's calls, you know, you're working against the other team, you're working against the refs. You know, guys are making mistakes. You could lose your mind literally every shift if you wanted to. You know what I mean? If you let it happen. But
I'd find myself, I'm the pigeon equipment guy, and I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, biting my towel because I want to scream at the refs, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah. So, yeah, I learned a lot, you know, from those quiet leaders. I mean, it's like managing composure is probably one of the hardest things to do for most people in a sport or not in a sport. It's the hardest thing to do. So
it is
something to learn from you know, guys like that. And G2, it's like at the end of the day, you can talk all you want. I've seen all these vocal leaders, say vocal players too, and they don't deliver. They don't back up what they're saying. You know what I mean? There's like, it's something to say about action. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to go out there and perform, be a high level performer consistently night in, night out, practice night, you know, day in, day out. That's action. You know, you don't need to say anything, you know,
right.
But he was the same way, you know? So, you know, 100%. He went on the ice and put his heart out there and left it out there. So, lots to be learned from these guys. It's just, I don't think the public generally sees, really the real true essence of what's going on right behind the scenes. So
yeah, and you have to take that into account. Like, sometimes, like, buddies or, you know, guys, people that come in, they're like saying, I'm like, well, you don't understand, but they don't get to see that side of it.
They don't get to see it. I understand
you that, know sure. You know, their fans are passionate here and,
yeah, they want answers.
That's
right?
A great yeah exactly
for sure.
So
all right, Nast, well, I think it's about time we jump into our interview with Chris Versteeg. This episode was presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. For some, the NFL draft is the most exciting day of the season. For others, it is a chance to build on last year's success. Whether your team has the first pick or the last, DraftKings is bringing the excitement to you. DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, is adding to the thrill by offering a free opportunity to enter draft pool this Thursday with $50,000 up for grabs. That's a lot, Nast.
That's a lot of money.
DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to play. Just download the DraftKings app, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen on draft night and track your results throughout the evening. DraftKings will be hosting a draft night specific pool with questions ranging from who will be picked before whom, all the way to if you think a team will trade a pick in the first round. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code Knuckles to enter the free draft pool with $50,000 in prizes up for grabs. That's promo code Knuckles to get a free shot at $50,000 in total prizes. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Oh, yeah. You get that play in because I know who the number one pick's going to be.
Ooh.
I think everyone does, but actually, yeah. I don't know. Maybe they don't. I don't know.
Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week we have a special guest, Mr. Steegalicious, two-time Stanley Cup champion, Chris Versteeg. What's up, brother?
Well, thanks for having me on. I figured you'd never have me on because I like to remind you about 2010 a lot, but Nasty, Thanks for having me, man. And Riley, thank you.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you carving out the time.
That still stings, obviously, a lot.
Well, we got to meet up soon after, so it worked out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, man. What's going on, big boy? What are you up to these days?
Currently, just started an app with a good friend of mine who's a coach and my brothers. It's a clip edit and share app, basically, for athletes and coaches and parents. So it's exciting. I think the tech that we've designed is really revolutionary and in a lot of ways that the athletes, players, and coaches can interact. So it's exciting stuff. And then I'm also doing a little bit of broadcasting on the side. So between those two things at the moment, super busy, but overall just exciting. And as Riley knows, retirement's hard. Sorry, buddy. Retirement's hard in the sense of trying to find a purpose and things to do. So I've been pretty fortunate to hop into some stuff right away and been keeping busy.
That's great. Why don't you talk a little bit about that app? Because I was reading about it a little bit and it sounds like something that's very valuable for, like you said, for the athlete and the coach and the team systems.
Yeah. So I'll go into the detail in the sense that it, like, there's the A coach, the B coach, and the C coach. And we really see a high value for the B coach, meaning, and the C coach, meaning the coaches that don't generally get the tech in order to help. And we've basically identified that through a lot of interviews and talking with and working with a lot of coaches in that B group category. And we definitely think that this can, and all, not only hockey, in all sport, really revolutionize how they interact with each other and between an athlete and a coach and a parent. So it's been hours and hours on end of research, hours of talking to people. You don't really realize in the startup space how much time goes into it. And that's just to get your idea. And then get your idea, you have to build the tech that validates that idea. And then you got to start using the tech to validate your idea. And you got to then also try to start to raise funds. Where we're currently at is we're in an investing round. And now we're trying to raise funds to start to expedite the idea in the process. So it's been a learning experience for me, as you know, Riley, especially, we don't really get educated. Like I didn't grow up with an education, playing hockey. I never went to university or anything. So these last years trying to educate myself and surround myself with people that can make this application really valuable for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Lots to learn, on the back end of sports, you know,
yourself
out and finding something that you actually want to do and believe in. And, you know, it's not that easy. I see a lot of guys struggle. So props to you for kind of finding your lane and pursuing it. Right. I mean, taking action, I think, is the most challenging part, probably.
For sure. I'm going to yell at my kid. Don't worry. Hey, stop it. Yeah, you're 100% right. It is really hard because we've been so geared and designed to think one way for so long, right? And now it's just really trying to fall in love with something new or something to find time. So that's also been an interesting part in this is in the year process, especially the last 7 months, the meetings and meeting new people and possible partnerships or investors, you just realize everything that goes into it. And also maybe how you could value another player who was in my situation. So I've talked about it with a friend of mine who's now retiring most likely from hockey. Like maybe if you want to job shadow me, you know, you can come into a meeting and see what it's really like, or maybe that's something I start to get going on the further I get along is, you know, maybe helping players in the transition, they can come into meetings and see what it's like and maybe help transition them a little easier into this world than I had it and understand this, what it's like, if this is something they want to do. So also trying to parlay that into helping other athletes, it doesn't only have to be hockey, but after the game, as Riley, I know you've got ventures and everything. There's a lot that happens and a lot of people that you got to trust and things that got to be in place and stuff you got to know.
Yeah. That's the truth. But it seems like you got a pretty nice vision. And again, you got some momentum behind you. And I think, you know, outside of the hockey space, you know, you're able to kind of use this creative force, right? That you never, I mean, yeah, you're creative on the ice, but like it's limited, right? You know, between systems and stuff like that. But now you got this like open canvas of what you can do with it. So it sounds like you're on the right path.
Yeah, I think to a little expand on that is, you can kind of maybe even talk about it more, is when you're done hockey, you've created so many relationships in the game.
Yeah.
And it's how you leverage those relationships, obviously in a positive way, but even to get meetings with people, maybe someone else couldn't get meetings with, right? It's how to leverage what you had in the past in order to help your vision in the future. So what you've done throughout your playing career is great, but what you can do with what you've done in your playing career to leverage going forward in your business or in what you need to do is could be even greater, right? So, I mean, that's obviously positive thinking and big thinking, but I don't think players really understand everything that they've set up, and I still haven't quite, but through their playing days.
Yeah.
Yeah, Riles, we've seen it, obviously, just like being fortunate enough to have you on, Steger, and everyone we've had, you know, it's through the relationships that we built, you know, at the same time when we were obviously in hockey. So that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. 100%. Man. Let's talk about your playing days and have a little fun with that. I know you're, I didn't realize you're drafted by Boston, honestly, until I looked you up yesterday.
We were talking about this, Steger. Now I didn't know that either. I don't know why I didn't know that, but you didn't even get in a game with them, but you were lighting it up in the minors, in the American League, in Providence. You were like, what did you say? Something to the coach? Would you're a pretty witty guy. I don't know if, well, people that know you know that could be a little bit of a smart ass, which was my favorite thing about you, how dry you are. But I'm kidding. But we were looking at it, and I'm like, why didn't you even get a sniff in Boston? They traded you before you even played a game there. But
yeah, so I think Shirelli came in. He was after I was drafted. I was drafted by O'Connell. And then when I started there, actually, I went back to junior and I was playing defense, right? So I didn't even think, and I didn't really have a good, I didn't really have a good year, and definitely troubled kid. I didn't really, you know, and I didn't think I was going to get signed. And then I got called up to Providence at the end of the year. And then they put me back on forward. And then kind of after they saw how I played on forward, they just signed to sign me, but they signed me to like a bare minimum NHL deal. So the next year when they got me, I don't think they really knew what they had besides Scott Gordon. Scott Gordon kind of knew what he had, but no one else did. And for the first 10 games, I played fourth line and I didn't really do much, but in the game 11, Peter Tenkret, if you know the name, he got called up to the NHL and I got put on the first line in the A and I played with David Krejci. And from then on, I had, I think I had like 48 points and might've been like 30 games. Like just, he was an incredible player, man. He made the game so easy. And I was on this insane run. Like I hadn't had those points in the minor or in the juniors even. Right. But I really dedicated myself that summer. And then finally I get to the AHL and I'm doing this well. And Sean Donovan gets hurt. And I think I'm going to be in the NHL now because Scott Gordon's like, hey, maybe the night before he's like, hey, maybe be ready. A couple guys got hurt. Glenn Murray, I think, got hurt too. And then we're on the bus to Manchester and he calls me up to the front of the bus and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to the NHL. Like, a year, like not even, like 6 months ago, I was selling shirts at Sport Check. You know what I mean? Like I was working in hard goods and clothing at Sport Check. And now I'm going to the NHL. And so I get up there and he's like, you just got traded. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, you just got traded. He's like, we needed to bring someone in. I'm so sorry, but we needed someone to help now. They were kind of ninth spot maybe. Oh, okay. So then, they ended up trading me for Brandon Bochenski. And so I ended up going with the team to the game, watched the game and came back with them on the bus from Manchester. And then I went up to Norfolk after. But that's kind of the story, how I didn't think I never thought really I was going to play in the NHL at that point. I always had it as a vision as a kid. When I got to like my teenagers and drafted and then playing defense, I was like, you know, it's not going to happen. And then within a little short stint of Scott Gordon, I really owe a lot to, giving me an actual huge opportunity. I mean, I still don't even think Boston really knew what they had, because I didn't even know what I was, you know? So yeah. I went to Chicago and it started to blossom even a little bit more. And then I got another chance. So I got lucky too, like a lot of chances and opportunities along the way. But I think it was just, I was a real opportunist, just taking advantage of times that I could, whereas some guys don't, right? I think right. That's the biggest part.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Well, it worked out well for you. Yeah, the trade yeah. itself. But I actually worked with Scott Gordon in Lehigh Valley, the Flyers minor league team there. And he does have an eye for talent, you know, for giving guys an opportunity, you know, and
crazy. Yeah,
it's interesting to hear you say that.
Do you know if he still runs that certain power play does he ever talk about that power play he set up back in the day?
You know, I don't know. I've been out of it for 3 years now, but he was always, you know, changing things around and tweaking little things. I mean, I'm sure he brought some stuff from his old Providence days. Yes.
Yeah. He had this weird power play where a guy in front of the net would shift back door. You know, it was like a rotational power play.
Yeah.
And the guy from the front would go rotate out back door, and it would be on the half wall guy and the net or and the goal line guy. They go back and forth. And when that was going on, there was rotating going on. And for some reason, this play would screw up everyone, and we'd get backdoor tap-ins all the time. Like me and Craig, she would just pass it. So I didn't know if he was still doing plays. It was kind of a new power play, and I've never seen anyone really do it since. But yeah, I didn't know if he was still trying these crazy things, but they would work out.
Yeah, I don't remember that one, but he definitely is, you know, in his office thinking about how he can kind of recreate the wheel, or, you know, and try and find like just different, the different plays. He's always just changing things around, but he was good to work with. You know, I learned a lot from him. You know, he was a character too. I'm sure you have a couple Scott Gordon stories. I didn't realize he was such an animated guy in the locker room for some of the stuff he's done, but he was good to work with.
Yeah. He let me know a few times. I remember Tyler Redenbach came down the ice and he was throwing sauce passes cross team. So one of my first games, I love Ragu
I was going to say.
and I threw this like slow, high sauce pass that got picked off, and I came back to the bench and he let me have it, you know, and like flashed. And I was just like, it's kind of been like something that stuck with me ever since. I'm like, if I'm going to throw a sauce pass, it's got to be a foot or 6 inches to a foot, and it's got to be a laser, and it's got
a little more beef on it.
What'd you say to me yesterday, Steger? Everyone loves would you say a tight? Was it tight?
Oh, I can't remember the word. Button tight. Yeah. Tight Ragu. There's nothing better. Yeah.
I was telling him, Riggs, we were doing those ice sessions, just getting some content. We haven't put any of it out yet, but I did a sauce pass and I turned to the camera and I said, how's that Ragu, Steger? Cause I know he loves the Ragu.
Yeah, there's nothing better. I mean, you saw Stasny throw it the other night. I actually like throwing a nice sauce pass to a goal even better than scoring. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm sure Flash would love that. Hey, go sell.
No. Oh, that's great.
He was great though.
Steger, I also was a little shocked at how many teams you've played for, counting junior. 16. Yeah. 16.
It's been a lot.
Like it's wild.
Everyone wanted you.
Yeah, everyone wanted you
for about a year, and then it wore off, right?
That's great. I
think you can play up and down the lines. I mean, you know, you can kind of be spotty. You can play consistently with third line, and if a guy goes down, you're valuable. I think that's from Nasty and I were talking about it before. I think you just like you add immediate value, and then I think you're okay with going back into a, you know, more of a role playing role. And then, you know, in teams, obviously you win two Stanley Cups and you know, you're doing something right. You know, I don't think it was a knock on you by any means from what I've
seen. No, I'm not.
It's people that, you know, teams want people. I
was actually shocked. Sure. Like I didn't realize
it either,
but I, you know what, in the back of my head, Riggs, I did, because obviously once I got to know him, I was always following him, and you know, the Kings, you know, I knew he went to Calgary because I was like, why wouldn't you sign with us? Try to sign with us. He's like, I'm going home, man. Like, you know, yeah. Calgary's home. So I'm like, oh, yeah, man. Right. Because I was hoping we were going to get him when he was available. You know, he's a free agent there a few years back. But
well, like, anyway. Like, there's a lot of reasons for it. Sometimes, obviously, Florida, for sure, my welcome was thin. You know what I mean? Near the end, I had a lot of injuries. And then you go to other places, injuries. And then cap, I made too much money for what I was producing at the time. You know, I was just, I was paid too much and I wasn't, you know, producing enough for what I was paid. There's a lot of other various reasons, but the way I tried to pride myself was playing all three positions and playing one through four lines. I don't see myself as playing as much on the fourth, but generally on the third. Or a second line. When I was in Florida, it was the top line and we ended up making the playoffs. So it was a great run. But kind of after that is when I had about a string of five big surgeries in 5 years and the body just couldn't hold up. And that's not what I'm just attributing to the end of everything with. But again, you can't pay a guy as much as they're paying me to play as many games as I was. There's just, I understood it and it sucked. But that's just how it was. But you're right. It was when you're playing in Chicago and you have Kane Taze or you have Kane Hosa, Sharp, you know, and those are like the wings. It's like,
yeah,
you got to do other things in order to be in the lineup. And you got to be able to play one through three lines, especially with Quenneville, because he really likes versatile players, guys that don't just play one set position. He likes guys that he can move from wing to wing to center. It's a really hard thing to do because the game's going so fast, but he likes that versatility because he likes to keep one or he likes to keep his horses going and he doesn't care how I'm playing. If I'm playing good, he'll put me with the horse. The second I'm not playing good, I'm not playing with him anymore. So it kind of forces you to be versatile and forces you to play a way that maybe you don't want to play. But for myself, I would have, you know, literally thinking back, like I would have like died to win, you know, especially in my younger years. It's crazy to think like you think that way, but you did, right? And you're like willing to do it. And that's yeah. how I truly felt.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to me, but like, well, you missed the one. You could have had three, but you were in Chicago for the one, but were you there with Chemo?
Yeah. That year, 2011, that was an unbelievable team. Oh, were you talking about 15? Sorry.
When yeah, I won. 15.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I played with him in 11 and 15, 11 with Philly and
with us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And watching him win it was unbelievable.
Oh my God.
That was awesome.
We had him on a few weeks ago and I was like, that was one of my favorite ones to see a guy raise it because he had been through a lot and he's just a great guy too, which, you know, but when you were here in Philly, man, you played hurt a lot of, you know, you guys never say that, but you were hurt. I remember you had surgery. You stuck around. My liver was bothering me for a while. You stayed around in the summer.
No,
and we were spring. And it was the spring and we were out every freaking night and I almost had to do something with my liver, but anyway, yeah, that was cool. You got to see that with Chemo. He's a great guy, and plus you played with him here too. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Who was the surgeon? He did a lot of, he's from Philly, right? The one who did my hernias.
Yeah,
Andrews.
I think that does sound right, isn't it?
Yeah, because I remember
maybe maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, right when I got to you guys, I had two hernias. And then I remember the one side was bad. And then we got to you guys and I played my first game in Tampa and second game in Florida. And I just remember my second side, I felt it rip. And then they were kind of testing me on the bed. And then I was kind of like, are they going to try to axe this trade? Because like they traded for a guy with like two hernias, you know? But I remember that and I think it was Andrews, but I remember a lot of guys went down there to do the hernia surgery with Philly.
Yeah, they did. A lot of guys, a lot of other sports too. Lot of guys been coming in, but Steger, I was telling Riles. So the first day you came, you played in Tampa. I remember you showing up and you said I greeted you in the hallway there and got all your stuff. And you're like, yeah, Eags and Sharpie and the boys told me to, find you or whatever. And so, yeah. So we go through the day. Guys come back for the game. Steger, I've never seen a guy switch gloves more than him. And I mean, I'm just like, this is when guys started doing it. like, but he was awful. Like, it was crazy. So this is there. There's two little quick stories about his gloves, but the first one was my favorite because I barely know him. He just got here. The anthem's going on and it ends and he turns and he's trying to get my attention, but he's not talking very loud. He's like saying something. And I'm like, are you talking to me? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, what are you saying? He's like, dirty. I'm like, nasty. He's calling me the wrong thing. Couldn't remember my fucking name. He's calling me dirty.
He
was like, he was going dirty, like without totally. Cause I think he knew it wasn't right, but he didn't know what it was. And I was crying the whole first period. I'm like, but anyway, and then we're playing in the playoffs in Boston that year. And the anthem's going on. And I would always bust his chops about his gloves because he changes gloves like all the time, the whole period. And the anthem's going on, and he looks at me and he's like, I'm like, no way. You haven't even, the game hasn't even started. He changed his gloves during the anthem. Or right,
the palms are sweating in the anthem.
I said, this beats everything, anything I've ever fucking seen, man. I was dying, man.
Well, every time we come back, you'd always be hanging gloves over the boards at me and warm up and everything. It's crazy. Everyone does it now, though, eh?
It was like that was kind of the beginning where, like, it's crazy now. Like, guys have like 3-4 sets of gloves. They're just changing, you know, like constantly during the game. I mean, you did sweat, but it was just funny. Like, you hadn't even gone on the ice. The gloves just came off the dryer, and he's like looking at me like, should I ask? I'm like, you're kidding. He's like, no, I need him. Yeah. Like, holy fuck.
I remember even in Toronto, I don't think no one really did it in Toronto yet. And I was there and Pappy, I remember I did it. And he was like, this kid's out of his mind. You know, he's like, this guy's an idiot. The way that kind of started though, is our whole team in Chicago did it in in 2008, Kane was always having two pairs of gloves on the bench. And I was like, man, I wish I could have two pairs. So we asked. And then finally, when Clint, rest in peace.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, man, can you have a pair of gloves in the back for me? I'm too scared to ask Parchy for a second pair. So that's kind of how it started with me. But as that time was going on, Sharp had an extra pair. He had two. Hossa would have a couple extra pairs. Brian Campbell, I think, had four pairs, four at that time. Yeah. And so, I mean, Parchy and Clint was going back and forth. So finally they're like, I'm not going back and forth. So that's why all the extra pairs got brought out. So when I came to Toronto, no one did it. And I was like, we kind of been doing this for like 2 years, right?
Yeah.
And then I got to you and really only Richards was doing it.
Mike, that's right. Yeah, totally right. That's right.
And I was like, oh boy, this is going to be bad. Cause I know Pappy hated it. Like he hated it. But Hastings would do it for me usually too. And I felt bad about it, but I'm like, man, like it just kind of designs you. And then when I did it before the anthem, I'm like, and I could see your face. You're like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
He didn't even take a lap yet. Like, yeah,
it was a tough national anthem. What do you mean?
Yeah, he was ready. He was sweating.
That was Buffalo though, right? Or was that,
was
Boston?
It Buff?
Buff Boston, maybe.
Yeah, it was Boston because you're right. It was Boston. It was Boston.
That team is so good, man, though.
Yeah, that was a good team, man. We talked about that before. I don't remember who was on. It was Beast because Prongs got hurt. If he hadn't got hurt, I mean, you never know. You always say what if, but you're right. It was a good team. It was a really good team. I posted that thing today where we scared you.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
The old stick bag?
He hadn't been there long. I guess he'd been there about a week. So I was like, I gotta get this.
Ottawa or Tampa?
We were in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And that when we got you. But it's funny that I turn the camera and you see Jeff Carter, Palsy Poo, Daryl Powell.
Oh, yeah.
And Zhirinov, Carbom. I'm just like, God, I was looking at it today. I've seen that thing 100 times, but I was like, geez, what a team. That was actually a really good team, man.
Oh, yeah. Zhirinov was my roommate.
Oh, boy. How was that? You had to have a roommate then? Was the rule not there so many games?
It was before it was the year after was the lockout, about a year and a half later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember he smoked though. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Turn
the fan on and
cigarettes.
Yeah. He'd turn the fan on in the bathroom and have a cigarette.
Well, you know what else, Steger, I meant to say about our nights in the spring was Johnny, our driver. Our buddy good man. See him every once in a while, not very often, but I saw him about 2 months ago, I think it was about 2 months ago, but he ended up taking over. He started taking care of Zheredev. Is that how you met him, actually? Maybe that's how you met him.
So this is how I met him. Zheredev didn't want to drive, and Bobrovsky didn't want to drive, so they hired John to drive him around.
Yeah.
And John ended up, after that, I needed to keep going to the hospital to get checkup and at the rink, and I didn't have a vehicle at that point because I sent it home. I think my girlfriend took it. She was my girlfriend at the time, wife now. She took it home, and he started driving me around, and I got really close with him, and then he got sick, I believe.
Yeah, he had a stroke.
He had a stroke?
Yeah, man.
And so I was like, oh boy, that's not good. But I haven't talked to him in a few years, but that guy, man, I remember one night I got home, and it was like, we got home, sorry, at like three.
Yeah.
And I come outside, and I'm like, okay, I got to get something to eat. So me and Brody, my friend who is staying with me, we go get something to eat. We come back, it's 8 a.m. and Johnny's sitting there in the parking lot with Bobrovsky and Zheredev. They're just sitting there. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, we're just hanging out. I'm like, have you guys gone to bed yet? They're like, no, we've just been sitting here the last like 4 hours. I'm like, so John is sleeping now, because that's what he did.
Yeah.
He just drove. So, I mean, amazing guy. I always worry about him since he had his stroke. And I think his daughter ended up driving for a little bit from what I heard, but I haven't talked to him in a few years. But man, Johnny, he is the funniest guy.
He was awesome, man. Oh. Right. I don't know if you ever got to meet him, Riles.
I've heard stories.
I got a couple good ones that we won't say today because it's family friendly. But I got some, and you know how you get all wound up, Seeger, in his voice. Oh my God.
He's Greek, right?
Greek guy. You can't understand. He's talking so fast. And, oh my God. Don't do that in here. And oh boy. This man saw more stuff. He saw more shit going on than a lot of people did.
Was that the same driver as Kyle Calder? Same driver that have him ripping around all the time?
No, I don't think so. No, he wasn't around.
Yeah.
Oh, Greece, there's another one. He was a beauty. Oh boy.
I don't know who he drove before. I just knew he started with Zheredev, but I know when Zheredev left, he left all his stuff. Hey,
everything.
And so Johnny got it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He put it in another storage unit or something. And he kept asking me, what do I do? I'm like, dude, he's not coming back. Like, sell it or something, because he's not coming back. You're paying money to store his stuff.
He left shoes, like expensive shoes. He left belts, he said. He left couches. And so Johnny put it in, and he's always asking. He said Zheredev was always like, I'm going to come back and get it. And I don't think he ever came back to get any of it. It was like a full house worth of stuff.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. Because his daughter wanted the shoes. Because the wife had like 50 pair of shoes, like brand new in boxing, expensive shoes, man. But Johnny was so afraid. He might come back. I'm like, he ain't coming back, bro. Like, this guy's not coming back.
It was a lot, but that was, yeah. Well, make sure you say that.
If I see him,
I used to bring him to all the games in Philly when I played. I played one of my last ever games I actually played in Philly, and I remember calling him, and I think his daughter came to the game. I don't believe he did, but I think he was struggling, but man, what a guy.
Good dude, man. Really good dude. Steger, I got to say, I hate to admit this to you, but I was so impressed with the Battle of the Blades watching you skate. Dude, that's impressive, man. Like, I don't understand how that's crazy. Just the skating, obviously you can skate. It's different kind of skates, obviously. Was that hard, like getting into figure skates? Yeah, or
not with my hips, though. Are you kidding me? Like, these figure skaters.
These hips don't lie, baby.
Hips are not Hitch. Figure skating. Yeah, it was like, I felt so bad for my partner, too, because all the other guys are like really big, strong guys. And she got this, like, when I played, I was like 175, 180 pounds. I'm like 160 now. You know what I mean? I was
soaking wet. I'm more jacked. I'm like way more than that.
And I thought, I'm like, is she going to pick me up? You know?
Yeah, right.
So, but man, they're such, like, their edge work is out of this world. Crazy. That's number one. The part that I struggled with was the toe picks. And a lot of like the next day, my hip soreness and body soreness, I was like, wow, like I'm pretty sore right now. I think I was just more so nervous of falling on national TV. Like that. Oh man. Before the first skate, they were like, I remember like an hour before, I'm like, I actually feel pretty good. You know, I'm like, I'm ready to go. Half hour before, I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready to go. And then like when you're sitting there, you're on set, they're doing a countdown. So it's like 10, 9. And I'm like,
oh man.
Oh, and I like literally before the first skate, I like my heart went to like 190 and I was like, I'm gonna black out here. Yeah. I vaguely remember going through the first part and she's like, you gotta calm down, you know? You gotta
calm down. She's telling you.
And then I'm like, and right after that, you got to do a lift, right? You got to like literally pick them up. So the first skate, I was like terrified during it before I thought I was fine. But as you started to go on, you got used to it, but it is definitely nerve wracking because you don't want to drop a human. Right. You actually have that fear. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
You might think the guys look composed doing it, but you're actually like, you're shaking below. Like,
yeah.
When I look on TV, I'm like, oh, you don't look like you're shaking, but you're shaking. You're like, it's hard to
imagine. I couldn't believe, like, you did a really good job, man. It's crazy. I'm sure did you have a lot of like lessons? I don't want to say lessons, I guess lessons like to do all that stuff or.
So normally what they do is they try to prep you during the summer months. They give you the skates and they try to let you get out there, but everything was closed down here. I got on the skates. Like I went to my kids' hockey. I'm coaching them and I put the skates on twice at my kids' hockey just to kind of stand around. So that's kind of all the prep we had. And then we had 1 week. It was a 1 week training camp. And then the next week was our first show basically. Wow. Two weeks later was our first show. So that was a training camp. The next week you had to start to learn a program. And then week three was your first show. So you really only had, two and a half till your first show, but it was, I mean, the first week was like, you're doing lifting lessons every day, like gymnastics. So you're standing outside doing like all the throws and holds. And then, I mean, I've never done any of that. Right. So,
right.
And then you're dealing with body soreness and all that. So it was the first month was a grind and I'm not kidding you. It was a grind, but at the end of the day, it was a great experience. And I met a lot of great people and, a lot of really, these athletes are crazy, man. Like their skating is insane.
I loved one of your posts. You had, I don't know what the theme was, maybe cowboy, but you had those tight spandex jeans on and Speaker's like, check out the hammies or something. Your hamstrings. You see his hamstrings. I'm like, it looks like it's going to pop. Be very careful, man.
Well, my, I can tell I'm done hockey now because my wife asked where my glutes went.
You got the old chameleon ass.
Yeah. My pants just fall off now. You know what I mean?
John Drew said to me one time, my first years with the Flyers, he says, holy fuck, D, you worked your ass completely off. I'm like, hey, man, fuck you.
I remember when she said that, I was like, oh boy.
You better start doing squats, squats.
Yeah. So
that's awesome. But seriously, that's amazing, man. Cause that looks, I couldn't even imagine trying to skate, picking someone up and all that stuff. I mean, special athletes, like you said, for sure.
Yeah. And it's, I think more than the lifts though, like the lifts, they're not near as impressive about what they're doing. Like for their edge work.
Yeah,
man. They're like doing crazy stuff. Like even with my kids now, obviously there's a power element you got to add to hockey, but early on, if you can teach them a lot of the edge control that these ice dancers and them go on, I'm sure it'd be, you can see why it's extremely beneficial for the new player now, right? Right. These young players that do a lot of this stuff from a young age, and then they start to incorporate power and do it a little later on. Like I never had that's the other thing. I couldn't afford it. Right. Like I've never had a skating lesson in my life, like a true, like broke down skating lesson, never had skills coaches. So understanding what these kids are dealing with now and what we know and what we can give them is ideal. And that's actually bringing it back to the app is hopefully that can reach kids like me back in the day that didn't have that opportunity to get that. Right. So,
right.
But yeah, that it's crazy. The, the ability they have now.
It is. Didn't Skinner grow up figure skating? Yeah. And yeah, you could see it in the way he, like the way he shifts and
they all do like that heel to heel now. And
yeah.
And,
all,
and like my hips would rip out of my body. Oh, like you'd be still laying on the edge.
Yeah.
Is that from the edge work? It really taxes the hips.
Yeah.
The edges, eh? Yeah.
Oh man. Like after the edge work stuff, I was like, I thought I was going to be fine. And the next day I was like, what is wrong with my hip? You know what I mean? And then I go again the next day. I'm like, I don't think I'm moving. It taxes your body a lot. Yeah.
Oh man. Thank God that was you and not me, man. I would have made a debacle. Of
yeah, I'm gonna sign you up for next year.
Oh, please, man.
That would be great.
I have seen a few guys that I fought back in the day that did it. So, I mean, maybe I have a chance.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I think like George guys. LaRoc, Colton Orr.
There's a bunch of that.
Guys. Yeah.
Oh, there's last year, Colton Orr, Brian McGrattan.
Oh, grats. Yeah.
The Big Earn.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, man, like they just throw, like they just, you know,
yeah, right.
No big deal.
They just throw them up. Right. And for me, it's like,
they thought he was the equipment guy coming in.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I'm here to sharpen skates. Oh no, I'm actually skating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, Steger. So I didn't know this. So did you get to play with your brother your last year?
Yeah, that was kind of the idea of my last season. I was trying to, you know, come back and help the Hawks farm system. And then if anything went good there, try to play in the NHL, but just couldn't deal with, you know, the ups and downs again at a game. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to retire, I want to play for Canada at the Spengler Cup and I want to retire with my brother. So I went and played a couple games with my brother in Slovakia. I actually got hurt, kind of got slew footed and landed on my elbow. So right before the tournament, I was a little hesitant, maybe didn't know if I could go to the tournament, but it ended up working out.
Yeah.
Played for Canada at the tournament. And in the gold medal game in the third period, we were up like 3-0, or right before I scored, actually, I blocked a shot and broke my foot.
Come on.
So I was out for like 2.5 months and I literally didn't do anything for 2.5 months. And then I was like, I want to go play with my brother to finish it off. So I flew to Slovakia. This is during right before COVID, like, and during this time they were like shutting down Italy. Right. I'm like, yeah. Are you sure I should be flying over here? And they're like, yeah, the season's still going. So I literally flew from on my couch for two and a half months off the couch into my skates, played one game with my brother, to basically play my last ever game. And then right then the league, like, my foot still was in a ton of pain. But then the whole league got shut down and I got sent home. So it ended up working out in the sense that I got to play my last ever game with my brother. And we actually had,
that's cool.
Yeah. We both had a couple points that game.
Oh, nice.
You know, so it was nice to like get on the score sheet with him. And like, we grew up, you know, playing every day on the street together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's a tough guy, right? Like he's 6'2", he could fight, hitter. And that's how he played against me on the street. But it was nice to see that it all kind of came full circle at the end, and it kind of worked out in a weird way. I don't know if I could have finished playoffs, but it was a great experience.
I remember the picture and I'm like, that's really cool, man. Another guy you played with, Max Talbot.
Oh,
what was that like? What a beauty. Oh my God.
He's one of my, I only got to play with him for a short while. Cause actually when I was in Russia, I got sick when I first got there and then I got shingles. But I got to hang out with him like every day. And he is one of the funniest guys and one of the best teammates I've played with. And again, I was only there for about a 6-week period, but like he's now a friend that I could just text and see how he's doing. And
yeah.
You know, check in and see how his family's doing. And I always said, I'm coming out there to hang out with him. I think he's got a tennis court he built at his house. And
okay,
I said, I'm coming up to Montreal one time to meet up, but man, he's unbelievable guy. He had an incredible career and he's got a lot going on too right now, currently, you know? So
yeah, I think he's going to join us in the next week or two, actually.
Yeah. So yeah.
I've been talking to him,
man. He's funny. He's just, we sat next to each other, right?
Yeah. Well, you probably don't remember the video you sent me. You two, I'd sent you guys a video saying something about, look at these two bookends, you know, and then these two sent me a video and Steger was like, oh, no, it's a video. Max is like leaning in to smile and he goes, no, it's a video. He goes, oh, fuck you, Nasty. I started laughing.
That's great.
I saved it. It was on Snapchat. I had to save it. It was too good. Those two sitting beside each other. I'm like, two of the funniest guys I was ever able to work with. And you guys were together. I thought it was great.
Yeah. And he was there, man. Like I had shingles, eh? Like, I don't know if you've had shingles.
Knock wood. No, I haven't.
Like, it was on my back and they thought it was a rash at the start. And he was like seeing me in pain, like, you know, just to see, he's probably like, look at this idiot. Like, he flies over here. He's got shingles. Like, it was horrible feeling. I remember I was like, we were driving in the Moscow. If you've ever been in Moscow, there's a lot of like, the traffic's crazy, right?
It's insane. I've been there. Yeah.
And to get to the airport is like 2.5 hours from the rink, 2.5, 3 hours almost. And I remember sitting in the bus, like, I was like, I'm going down. Like, I'm going down. And then we flew to play St. Petersburg the next day. And I was like, I can't play. And I was like laying in the room and Max is like, what is going on with you? I'm like, man, I'm dying. Like,
shingles, man.
Yeah. But then soon after that, I ended up just heading home. But so I headed home soon after that. But yeah, it was, man, he was a great guy.
He's awesome. And you were fortunate enough to play with the up dog as well.
Yeah. We all know Uppy. What a treat. Yeah. And that's the thing. The thing with him is it ended up going pretty well at the end for him. He got to play for Canada. I played with him. Yep. You know, we played 2.5 years in Florida. What a character. One of the funniest guys, again, I've played with. Really, really says what he wants, you know.
Yeah.
And he's entertaining, obviously, with everything he's got going on now.
Yep.
But I was just so happy. Me and him and our, you know, he had his girlfriend, I believe she was pregnant at the Spengler Cup.
Oh, okay.
I remember he told me right before the Spengler Cup, but we ended up winning together.
Yeah.
We won the gold together. Awesome. And I remember we went out and partied that night with everyone. It was, man, it was so much fun. We had the cup in this random underground club in Switzerland, making them play EDM, jumping up all night, holding this Spengler Cup trophy that's made of wood. I'm like, this thing's going to break in half, but it was a fun night and a fun way to cap off both our careers.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Nothing really bothered that guy. Nothing. That's for sure.
Yeah, right? No bad days. Like,
no bad days.
It's exactly right. No bad days for that man.
But
yeah.
I remember when you guys were in, I think you were in Florida at the time, but we went downtown to eat. It was early and Uppy's like, oh, let's meet up a little later. I'm like, okay, cool. Come to his place. He had that place up top in that apartment building, whatever it was called. But we're going in to eat. And here comes Uppy down the street on that motorized, it's a skateboard or something. I don't know if it was a skateboard or a scooter or what. But
like a Vespa?
He's got no shirt off. Yeah. And Chris, Los Olas, right down the boulevard or whatever it's called.
He lived right on Los Olas.
Like, yeah.
Right in that condo, and yeah, he had a great spot there. And
well, yeah, I was
Uppy was built for Florida, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
No shirt, just cruising around.
Just cruising. Yeah, doing what he likes. Coming to the rink, you know. And you know the other guy who was built for Florida was Jose Theodore.
Oh yeah.
Anyone played with him? Same thing. He rode his Harley to the rink, you know. Oh, he has like the two sleeve tattoos.
Oh, okay.
Flowing hair. And I was just like, this guy, man. What's going on? Such a cool guy, though. But him and Uppy were made for that organization.
Yeah. Well, it was funny seeing him. Like, you're right, though. He's in Newport now. So it's like,
yeah, same deal.
He's on the water. Yeah. You know,
like, he's golfing.
No bad days. Barefoot golfing. Wherever the hell he's playing, he probably gets on everywhere he wants.
He's playing at Michael Jordan's course, I heard, or something.
Oh,
he was on one of his podcasts or something, but he was talking about playing at Michael Jordan's course the one day, and he's just uppy, man. He's living.
Yep.
Yeah, he's living.
That's right, man. Good for him.
Yeah. Hey, Steaks, I was going to say you're a little bit of a showman, you know, with the Battle of the Blades, but it sounds like you have like a reputation within the NHL for your singing in public.
Yeah, well, used to.
You're not doing it anymore?
Yeah, well, it took a lot of liquid courage or like a reason to do it. Yeah, that piece used to be just to piss off my friends and family, right? You'd sing in the car, and or if you're at a party. I remember I did it for Danny Briere too. Year-end party, I sang for him. He was like, "Who is this guy?" You know, but it was more just to get a reaction from people.
Yeah.
And then when it started to go viral was in Chicago, and Adam Burrish made me sing there. You know, Sarah Spain, she works for ESPN. She used to come into our room and she wouldn't ask like regular hockey questions. She'd kind of just ask like fun stuff. It was actually really fun interviews. And then Burrish had me sing, and then the video went viral, and then we won the cup a year and a half later. And then everyone wanted me to sing at the rally. And then it kind of kept just moving on and on. I even remember one night we were at a club with Jay Cutler, and me and Jay Cutler were singing karaoke at like a nightclub, you know?
Come on.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
I sang a lot of karaoke, and I mean, if anyone gets married, I'll still sing at their wedding today. You know, I moved from like rap into like, I do a lot of Prince, you know, Purple Rain now.
Yeah. Your song.
Yeah. It's Purple Rain.
Yeah. I'll play guitar and you sing.
I've moved from the rap to that, but yeah, it was always to get reactions of people, whether they liked it or not, and just read the room. And then a couple times again through the cup championships, they went viral just to kind of put on a show for the guys a bit.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's so good.
You probably got a lot of weird looks too, hey, when you make people feel a little bit uncomfortable almost. Oh, yeah. Right?
That's almost kind of why you do it, right?
Yeah.
I remember walking through Chicago after we won, and people are like, "Do you think you can sing?" Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
right. I'd be on the street and they'd be like, "Hey, maybe just stick to hockey." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, like,
of course,
not going to be a
relax."
So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, but I was kind of doing it to get those reactions, and it was fun though. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm sure you've seen some funny reactions. I was going to ask you too. You landed up in LA and played for Sutter.
And oh yeah.
You got to have a Sutter story or two.
Oh, he was. Well, so I played for Brent when Brent put me on defense, right?
You had him in Red Deer.
Yeah. And I actually bought the Sutter's hockey school from them. Me and Devin Setoguchi, we're good friends with Rich and Ron. We're closer with Rich and Ron.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we bought their school, the Sutter Ice School, in 2010. And so I've known the Sutters forever, played with Brent. So I'd never played for Daryl, but when I went to play for Daryl, the biggest thing I remember is the meeting with Lombardi. Was it Lombardi?
What did I tell you, Rob?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
tell you. Dude. So he's like, I have tattoos right here, right? So I walk in, he's like sitting like this.
Yeah.
Right? And he's got his like.
Was he facing you or looking out the window?
He was looking at. So he's got this board and it has a number of like all the guys who've won three cups and then all the guys who've won two cups. So all the Hawks had three cups, and then all the LA guys had two cups. And he's like, "I want to be up there with those Hawk guys," right? But he's like looking at the board and I'm like sitting over here, right?
He's not looking at you, right?
He's not looking at me.
No. Schinner told me the same thing. Anyway.
He's scrolling this book and I look at the book and it's the stats book. It's those big, thick NHL stats books. And he's looking and he stops on me. He goes, "Why have you played for so many teams?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I'm a massive underachiever." And he's like, "Okay." And I'm like, "What the fuck's going on?" You know? Yeah. And then all of a sudden he kind of looks at me. He's like, "What's this dirt on your arm?" And I'm like, "Dirt? I don't know." I'm like, "Dirt?" He's like, "Tattoos." I'm like, "Oh yeah, yeah. You know, I got like, you know, my kid's name and I got a motorbike here." He goes, "You ride motorbikes?" I'm like, "No." he's like, "So you're a poser." I'm like,
"That's what he's posing." Yeah. Oh,
and I'm like, "Well, my dad has a motorbike, you know?" And then, so that's kind of how it was. Just like the whole meeting was like that for like 15 minutes, man, 20 minutes. And I was like, I came out of there. I was like, "What just happened?"
Just grilling you.
But he ended up calling me. I forgot what he called me. He wanted me to play Greasy. And he liked when I played Greasy the most. So he called me Grease. So every time I walked around, he's like, "Hey, Grease." And then he kept saying, he's like, you play like Justin Williams, but you're just not as consistent as Justin Williams. You need to be Greasy like Justin Williams. I was like, okay. And then, so that I was like, that's fine. But yeah. Anyway, that was kind of the, how it talked, but it ended up being like, I have this story forever, man. Just like, it was funny. And you know, it was something like, I didn't come out of there like, oh, he hates me or anything. It was just more like
a mind fuck.
Is he okay? Is he all right?
That's what I wanted to be like, are you okay? But it was funny. It was super funny. And thinking back to it too, just the whole situation. But flew from Carolina, it's like 10 in the morning, you know, I'm just getting off of like out of bed, like what's going on? But it was fun.
I've heard some like insider like talks on those types of conversations, like especially the combines and stuff like that, where they have like the, you know, the head of scouting and everything. They have these questions like teed up, like just to fuck with the kid. You know what I mean? And it's like, they, you know, they almost have fun. It's almost like a joke for them to do that and see what kind of response they're getting out of it.
You can easily see how they set that up.
Yeah.
Especially for the young kids to see how they handle it. Like,
for under sure. pressure, it's like, oh, I got dirt on my arm. What?
Braden Shen was telling me when he was there, you know, he was 19, like, I think he made a team when he was 19, maybe, or maybe he was 20, but he says, I get called up to Dino's office and he said he never looked at him once. He had his feet up, looking out the window, talking to Shenner, and Shenner's like, what's he doing? Like, is he going to turn around and like, look at me? Not one time did he look at Shenner. He's just giving him shit the whole time. And then he goes, get the fuck out. Shenner goes, all right. He gets up and walks out.
Well, that was basically it. And I played 9 years in the league at that
point. Exactly. Right? You had been playing. And it's not like you're new, but
yeah. And he didn't care, which you got to respect. But yeah, he was facing with his feet on the desk, facing the window, but like looking at, again, I'm pretty sure you're looking at the board with all the cups on it.
Oh, that's funny, man. And we were talking about Daryl because I've heard so many good stories from Brian Boucher and Craig Berube, Chief, is like, we would just be getting into the room. It's like 4 o'clock, you know, for a 7 o'clock game. And this is way back when. He goes, we had the radio, we would turn the music on. He goes, we'd have the music blasting, guys, like just sitting down, like sipping on their coffee. And you look up because you can't hear because the music's loud. Daryl's leaned over, ties all fucked up, and he's spitting. You better be ready. He's telling Chief's like, it's 4 o'clock. He's like, Chief just started laughing. But he's like, boys better be ready. What? And he says, we'd be talking. We're in a stick room, like working on our sticks back then, you know, Chief and those guys were heating the blades up, you know, like, so he's like, we're in there. Somebody'd say something, we start laughing. You turn, someone grab your arm. The fuck's so funny? We got a game here in 2 hours. It's like, holy shit, he's scary. Just sneak up on guys.
Oh man, it was like, it was, that's the one thing I found was like crazy was before a game, you know how like a coach comes in at the 6 minute mark and they leave? Sutsi just stays in there and he makes, and the assistants would stay in there. And so this is a pretty funny story. Carter could maybe tell it too. So there was Payne. What's it, Davis Payne?
Yeah. The assistant coach. I know who you're talking about.
I can't remember
his first name. Yeah.
Painter. But so they would all just stand in there like this, you know? And I'm like, and I was like, and this is like, they stood in there from like the 6 minute mark till you walk out onto the ring. And everywhere I went, the coach would come in, they leave, and then you go out. Right. They're only in there for like 30 seconds. And I was thinking, I'm like, are they ever going to get out of here? You know? So the one game, we're in Vancouver and Painter comes over to me and he's like, are you ready to go, Steer? You know, because they walk around and they go around to everyone for the last 6 minutes. They're trying to go to everyone to get you ready. I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to go, you know? And then I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. You know, I turn around and I always put my jersey facing outward, but he wanted me to face like the logo to face out or outward or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, I go to grab the jersey. I put it on and my number's on the front. Right. And Jeff Carter's like, your jersey's on. Your jersey's on. So I turn around and I didn't know. And then Painter's like, Steger. Your jersey. and he's like, turn your jersey around. You're not ready. I'm like, I'm ready. I'm ready. I take my jersey and Carter is crying laughing.
Oh my God. I got to say something about that. Oh, that's great, man. Kevin Deneed did that one time. My first year in Philly, he was here before he got traded and he was walking down the chute at the Spectrum and his jersey was on backwards. Oh, no, man. Boys weren't going to tell him. Finally, someone said something. He was like, oh, my God. But he didn't even know it. That's pretty good. That's great.
That's pretty good. Darryl. Hey, Steeks, before we let you go here, because I know you're on lockdown, you got the crew there. You got to have a nasty story or two.
Oh, man. There's so many in such a short time. But, like, my favorite stories I tell everyone is, like, he was just constantly pranking everybody. Again, the one in Ottawa is what I tell everyone. Like, this guy, like, knows I'm still nervous. I'm on edge. I just get traded to a team. And he's filming me, pranking me in front of everyone, you know? So it was just, just reminiscing on all the times. And even when I wasn't there, he would always be, you know, on the bench making faces at me, you know, especially at the starts of games. I'd be with Calgary. I'd be with Chicago. I'd be with other teams. And it was like the pranks never ended. So it was great, man. And I can't thank Nasty enough for everything. And, you know, our time together was short, but friendship definitely happened there. And still to this day, you know. So, and that's the biggest thing, is knowing the relationships that he kept with all his players is great.
Yeah, no, for sure. I can attest to that.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. Steer is one of my favorite guys because, one, he's a hell of a player. And I love that shit about being greasy. That's what I always remembered about Steger before I knew him. I'm like, this little rat. He's like, he's good though. Like, good. He's scoring, but he's like, he's getting in guys' faces. He's chopping guys, doing these little things. But that's what I really liked about Steger. And he was, as soon as he got there, like, everyone loved him. And all the boys that were friends with Sharpie and those guys are like, dude, you're gonna love this guy. Yeah. And we did, and we still do. So it was fun having Steger. I wish we'd had him longer. Remember, you got traded. We're like, he had traded to Florida. Like, what the hell? He's like, Homer called me, and I think he was gonna cry or something. I don't know. He's like, I wasn't even here long.
Yeah. No, I remember the year-end meeting, him kind of asking what I could do better. And again, I took definitely a reduced role, which is fine. We're trying to win a cup. And then he kind of talked about the next year. And then I remember I was in Whitefish, actually, and he called me that they traded me to Florida. But I think how it went down was Florida was trying to sign Yager at the time, and then they didn't know if they were going to agree on a deal. But then Philly wanted to sign Yager, but they couldn't afford to have me and Yager. So I believe there was obviously you take Yager, but the deal was to move me on so you could fit Yager in the cap, because he signed for the same contract I had. I believe he took 3 years for a $3 million cap hit when he first came back. But that's how it kind of worked out. But it was short lived, man. I mean, they moved out everyone that year, right, to bring in goaltending.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. They sure did.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. Like,
yeah. No comment.
No, I actually saw Briz the other day. I don't know if I told you that, Riles, but we can get to that later. But yeah. Steger, it was, seriously, man, you know, you're one of my favorite guys, dude. Like, we've stayed friends since, you know, once you left, and we appreciate you coming on, man. We really do.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
It's great.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. You better get to the boys there. They're fired up.
Yeah.
Dude, it's all day.
You get a ball to the head there in a second if you don't give him some attention.
Elvis is just
throwing cars.
I know. I saw it. You get up to paint the walls. Elvis keeps coming around, like, looking in.
He's waiting.
Like, you can't see I got my finger, like, stay back, bro.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, thanks again, man. And, yeah, reach out anytime, eh?
Yeah, for sure, man. Good luck with everything, dude. And
good luck.
You got the playoffs coming on. I know you're doing stuff with Sportsnet. But we got to throw in a few of your nightly stick points, you know, with the Warriors.
Yeah, that's the playoffs. That's when I did it in the playoffs.
So 100%. I'm enjoying that. So we'll see that when it
comes. I'll be using the golf club.
Okay. All right.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, brother.
Appreciate it, man.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, man.
That episode was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. For the best sharpening around, visit SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com. And for any relaxation needs or stress-related needs, check out BodyCheckWellness.com. Nasty, that was awesome interview with Chris Versteeg. What an amazing guy. Interesting career, you know, to talk to a guy that thought he would never make it, never have a chance to make it, and to go on and you know, play just under, I think, what was it, 700 games and two Stanley Cups, and to kind of be you know, a pivotal player on most of these teams he played on is pretty impressive. And you know him better than I do. So,
yeah, he, you know, I think he had a little bit of everything in his game. He was a skilled player, obviously. He has a lot of skill, and he was versatile as well. Like you mentioned in the, you know, when we interviewed him, you know, third to second line, even to get thrown on the first line here and there. He's good enough to do that. But the thing I really liked about Steger, even before I knew him, was just the little edge that he had when he played, because he's not an overly big guy, which, you know, we know, but he's a little shit. A little prick. You know, he was a prick. He's always giving a little shot, always had something to say out of the side of his mouth. Nick Cousins always reminded me of him. Cousy just would, you'd see Cousy kind of saying something out of the side of his mouth. Next thing you know, a guy would chop him, and they're in the box, and he's like looking around, and he's on the bench, you know, snickering, laughing a little bit. But Steger was a lot like that. But he was a hell of a player, and two Stanley Cups, and I didn't realize he played D. Like
That is,
he'd
wild,
be a little D man. He's not a very big guy. I know that there's a lot of players that aren't huge anymore, but I didn't know he was a D man.
Well, I think they, you know, tried to put him back there with Brent Sutter. I think, you know, the Sutters are always trying to kind of reinvent the wheel and be creative. I think maybe they saw him as like, you know, a quarterback back there, just like skating the puck up the ice and whatnot. But it's tough for a forward, you know, say a career long forward. I mean, you played 10 years of forward and going back on D, and, you know, and trying to be responsible back there is a tough thing to do. But I get it. Maybe as far as junior hockey, carrying the puck up the ice and, you know, having a good puck possession defenseman, maybe he didn't have one at the time. I can see where the heads are at, but that's a tough challenge for any player. You've seen it the opposite way, even with the Flyers, with Sam Wren, you know, career defenseman, move him up on, you know, up front, which is an easier transition, right? Less responsibility up front. But nonetheless, it's hard to do. Obviously Steger is he's a forward, you know, he's a creative forward, and a great guy, great personality. You know, you said he's got like a dry sense of humor, but he's witty, you know, he's always kind of like sarcastic and feeling the room and screwing with people. So it was a great interview. It was nice to reconnect with him.
Yeah. He's an awesome guy, man. Got a lot of cool things going on too. So it's good to catch up with him.
Absolutely. And good luck to him and his entrepreneurship and his newest ventures. I know he's got a few things going on there, and sounds like some cool technology that he's working with, and hopefully he can revolutionize the sports arena with the tech. And it sounds like he's got a, you know, good head on his shoulders, and he's positive and kind of found his niche. So wish him the best.
Yeah, for sure, man. Great guy. Great guy.
Right on, knuckleheads. Let's tune in next week for episode 21 of Nasty Knuckles. That wraps up episode 20. Until then, stay safe, have a little fun, and we'll see you then.
See you, knuckleheads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.